As always, it is my pleasure that you join me for today's podcast of Second Chance Coaching. My name is Dr. Richard Lewis. If you'd be so kind as to leave me a rating and your feedback, I would very much appreciate it, and it will help others like you to optimally discover this podcast wherever you listen to this and your other favorite podcast. As you know, at Second Chance Coaching, we focus on seeing everyday life through the eyes of the returning citizen and highlighting the resiliency of the human spirit. I would love to work with you one-on-one, whether you're a returning citizen or coaching client seeking your second chance, or you're a representative of a business, college, or university seeking to integrate and support returning citizens in your respective organizational and learning environments. Please feel free to contact me via email at richard@secondchancecoaching.com or via Instagram at @drrichardlewis. Welcome again to another edition of Second Chance Coaching. As always, it is my pleasure to join you on another week of your re-entry journey from whichever corner of the world you're listening from. We always remain humbled and excited that you've decided to spend part of your week with us. And as always, everything is going well on this side of the world. This week marks my first week in this term in which I'm teaching night classes. As I might have told you in earlier podcast, we have classes that could go a full 16 weeks, 8-week semester, or a 12-week mini semester. So this week, I'm teaching 2 8-week classes that I'll be teaching on Tuesdays and Wednesday nights. At the time I'm recording this episode, I taught a class last night, one of our new speech classes, Speaking for Professionals, and that class went really well. Tonight I'll be teaching compensation and benefits. But last night, Speaking for Professionals was the first night, went really well, particularly on the first night. And this is a speech class that specifically concentrates on optimizing one's speaking skills in professional environments, as well as honing one's skills in making professional presentations. The main thing I was hammering down for the students last evening was that whether or not you're interviewing for a job, looking to get an apartment, secure a loan, or any other professional presentation that you're making, that the success in my eyes for endeavors such as this is really built on the foundation of you being your own passionate advocate. This made me think about our topic this week, about advocacy not being easy. In the professional context, we talked as a class about the job interview specifically and why would we be so nervous. So much so that we could be so much so nervous in a job interview that we even forget about being our own most passionate advocate. So it got me to thinking, and it made me ask them this question as well. Why does this nervousness take place? And some of the reasons are we think about what's on the line. You know, we really want that job. We really want that promotion. We may really want that place to live. That may be the account we're really trying to land. That may be a grant that we desperately trying to secure. So many different thoughts are going on at the same time while this is happening. And at the same time, we could also have thoughts of imposter syndrome going on, running through our heads. Maybe we're thinking, is someone else better than us? Are we good enough? Are we really even up to par? Then I think of those of us on our reentry journey. And the one question that we always ask ourselves, are we indeed good enough? They may like me now. They may think it's okay now, but when they find out about my record, they're just going to throw me out like yesterday's trash. So maybe when I do my presentation, maybe I won't be so passionate because maybe they'll consider that being aggressive. I even said that to my class last night. Being a 6'3", 300-pound, bald-headed and black, that could be give off nonverbal vibes of aggression when I'm only trying to be assertive in what it is that I'm trying to get. But think about all those thoughts. Think about all the things that I just mentioned to you just now. Look how we get into our own heads and trick ourselves sometimes out of opportunities because of that, we either won't go for the opportunity or we just won't advocate for ourselves. When I was coming of age and I would question, I remember growing up, when I was coming of age, I started, and you know, you become curious and you become a kid and you just ask why in a lot of ways. I would question my father specifically about a lot of things. I didn't think I was being disrespectful, but like any child, one just wants to know why. Well, why is that? And why is this? In my father's generation and the way in which we grew up, my sister and I grew up, advocating for yourself and really questioning anything was seen as a sign of disrespect. And it was answered and handled with punishment by either grounding you or taking things away, or depending how much of a fuss I kicked up, it meant corporal type of punishment. getting a little tap tap on your backside to ensure compliance on my part. My interpretation of this type of dynamic in growing up led to me really struggling with being a self-advocate. It's struggling with self-advocacy because through that forced compliance in the way in which I grew up, and among other factors, I don't want to just blame it on that, I had developed a low self-esteem. I developed a desire to not want to be rejected. And I lacked the appropriate assertiveness, as well as lacking the confidence to regularly speak up for myself. It was through various experiences, including my own criminal justice journey, that essentially forced me to become my own self-advocate. And even when I went through bereavement counseling, when you go through counseling, there's so many layers that you unpack. So when I went through bereavement counseling after Mom and Nnamdi passed away, it was through some of the issues we found in counseling that helped me find my voice and my confidence to be a self-advocate. But it's still never easy, and it can be a struggle. However, when I think of what could happen when I don't advocate for myself, I am not in love with the alternative. I would rather ensure that I'm an advocate for myself, even though being an advocate for yourself, like I said, is really not easy. Not because you can't find your voice, once you find your voice, but the opposition, your enemies, are never going to be one to just lay back and say, "It's okay, no problem, Richard, you're right." Since you're standing up for yourself, you got the right to just go ahead and get anything you need and want. People are going to make you fight for it. They're going to make you fight for what it is that you want to get. They just won't give it to you. But, self-advocacy is also encouraged through your support system, your mentors, your friends, your loved ones that could be there to boost your confidence and help you be empowered. Earlier, I spoke about my criminal justice journey, and in past episodes, I talked about my criminal justice journey really being that quote unquote come to Jesus moment for me and tapping into my self-advocacy. I shared in prior podcast episodes that when I was under indictment, my lawyers and I met with the district attorney to really give my side of the story. And my objective in meeting with them was in hopes of having my charges being dropped. I said, "Okay, they'll understand what's going on. My charges will be dropped for sure." After those meetings, the district attorney still insisted on me pleading guilty in order to resolve the situation. And they were offering me a 1 to 3 year sentence, or I could take my chances with the at trial with the promise, the absolute promise that they would pursue an 8 to 10 year sentence. Now, it was implied, and in some cases clearly said, if I was willing to lie about someone or quote unquote play ball with them, I would certainly be given consideration as far as my sentence was concerned, or as far as any type of resolution of my case was concerned. But I wasn't made any firm promises. So after that was discussed, I went home and really discussed it with my mother. And as I've told you before, my mom, my hero, she reminded me that in this family we don't lie and we don't bear false witness against anyone. So not that that was a consideration, but she automatically made sure that that was taken off the plate. Then she said, "Richard, I know you're innocent. You know you're innocent. But in these cases, sometimes you have to fight for what you believe in. And then remember, one day you're gonna have to look at your kids. You're gonna have to look at Julian and Nnamdi, and they're gonna come to you with advice about how to face their fears and when they have to come to the crossroads and fight for what they believe in." My mother reminded me, you cannot be a hypocrite, and tell them to fight for what it is that they believe in and conquer their fears, and you know within yourself you didn't do the same thing. Mom was right. Mom was so right. I declined the 1-3 sentence. I wasn't going to plead guilty for something I didn't do. And I just wasn't going to do it. Unfortunately, at the trial, as you know, as we shared before, I was found guilty. And the district attorney kept their promise. They wasn't playing around. They kept their promise. And they went in court. And at my sentencing, they asked for that 8 to 10 years. And the judge, you know, looked at me, mulled it over, thought about what my sentence should be, looked at all the letters of support I received, and, you know, the sentence report I had. I guess he looked at the law and whatever else he contemplated. And then he sentenced me to 1.5 to 4.5 years. That was a break. But certainly not because the judge was a fan of mine or was a nice guy. He was neither. But as far as I was concerned, me being able to get a 1.5 to 4.5 year sentence after being asked for an 8 to 10 year sentence, this was all by the grace of God. At the end of the day, as you know, I was released into work release after just 6 months. So people who bear false witness against me and whatever sweetheart deals they got, I still got out before them and they testified against me. Once again, the grace of God. The grace of God ensured that my self-advocacy and my self-confidence was starting to build. Even when I look at today, at the present day, my daughter Julian is in the criminal justice reentry space and is a passionate advocate. And humbly, I have to say, in her and I having these conversations about my experience, I definitely always have her love, but I also have her respect. And that is something I very much cherish. Now, fast forwarding to today, you know, this past academic year, I served, proudly served on the Faculty Senate. And part of the things that we did as a Faculty Senate, we work in co-governance with the administration on different initiatives in which the faculty are a part of. So the Faculty Senate is one of the leadership arms of the faculty at the institution. The other would be our union chapter. And the Faculty Senate, we developed for consideration as a pilot, the Senate endorsed it for the most part, a faculty advising model, which would be utilized to increase our student engagement and provide supplemental income for full-time faculty. The only resistance we met was from the leadership of our union chapter. The leadership felt that this was something to be bargained in collective bargaining, while we felt the pilot fell directly under an existing article of the collective bargaining agreement. Despite that disagreement, as a member of the faculty union myself, I encouraged the union to negotiate the article if they felt so strongly about it. I thought it was a dead issue at that point. You know, we could agree to disagree, bargain it, no problem, we're good to go. Of course, I could not have been more wrong. Over the next 3 to 4 days, myself and other faculty senate leadership were bombarded with emails from a rogue member of the union negotiating team saying we were negotiating with the administration outside the bounds of the collective bargaining agreement. It's a violation of the collective bargaining agreement. And did I want to be known as someone who broke with solidarity and broke the law? All kinds of triggering language. As a returning citizen, this was incredibly triggering for me, because when you accuse me of breaking the law, and what's even doubly triggering, that now I'm once again in conflict with a labor union, you know, that just wasn't cool. Because these emails not only went to me and not only went to my fellow faculty senate leaders, they were also courtesy copied numerous other faculty senate members and union members were copied on this correspondence. So not only was this something being triggering for me by this rogue member, this person wanted to make sure to figuratively pull my pants down in a very public and humiliating fashion. But, you know, I didn't say anything. I didn't respond right away. I utilized a lot of stoicism. You know, we talk about that in earlier podcast episodes about utilizing stoicism in your reentry journey. And at our next public union meeting, the faculty advising model was on the agenda. And when it was my turn to speak, I passionately, vociferously, and directly self-advocated and spoke to that rogue member and any other members of the union leadership that felt the way he did, that public displays of antagonistic, triggering, and bullying behavior would not be tolerated. Never, ever, ever, never be tolerated. Now, it was still met with some defensive responses, and I in turn responded again. But at the end of the day, Dr. Maya Angelou's words were manifested clearly, in which you have to teach people how to treat you. You know, the reason why today's podcast is so late in the day is that I had a meeting today informing me that the Florida Education Association, which the union chapter brought this issue to, did not view this, the faculty advising model, as a grievable issue. And our union chapter, as a matter of fact, is now talking to us to present this matter using our report on the faculty advising model as a foundation to open collective bargaining and negotiations with the administration on this matter. Once again, another win for the grace of God and another validation for self-advocacy. But you know, I was looking up a blog about advocacy and advocating for oneself. And you know, the blog was sharing with me that, you know, advocating for yourself could be challenging for so many reasons. And it's a common struggle. It's a constant thing that takes place. But it says there's five ways that help you work on concentrating on how to stand up for yourself. And let's go through those five ways together. Number one, self-awareness. You need to understand your own needs, values, and boundaries. Self-awareness will give you a strong foundation to advocate for yourself in so many different situations. Number two, assertiveness. You have to practice expressing your needs and concerns in a very clear, direct, and respectful manner. It may involve setting a lot of boundaries, saying no when you have to, and asking for what you need. Number three, confidence. Believe in the validity of your own feelings and opinions. That confidence could help you speak up and assert yourself in so many different contexts. Number four, preparation. Before advocating for yourself in a specific situation, take the time to prepare your points and anticipate potential objections or challenges. That's what it is that I had to do when it came to that union situation. I didn't respond right away when the emails came out. I just had to make sure that I was prepared to respond in the way in which I felt was going to be most appropriate. And number five, seek support. It really is okay to seek support from family, friends, or professional resources when you're advocating for yourself, because having that support network can really bolster your confidence. So the blog shares with us that advocating for yourself is really a process. You know, you could start off small and gradually build your skills in that area, but even when you're going through that process, it's important, as always, to be kind to yourself and recognize it's okay to feel vulnerable or uncertain at times. Even today, even now, I still feel vulnerable and uncertain at times. But what I do, but like I said earlier, I don't want to sit there and be faced with the alternative of not standing up for myself. And speaking of advocacy and what it is that we do, right now, the end of the legislative session for the state of Florida has concluded. So hopefully we're going to have some bills go in front of the governor's desk that the governor will sign because they have passed committee, and I believe they are now they are final bills that are ready for consideration. And one bill is Senate Bill 2516, Florida Senate Bill 2516, which will allow us as community colleges to opt into the state group health insurance plan. That would be a huge win for us in order to make healthcare more accessible, better healthcare more accessible and more affordable for employees of community colleges. The other Senate bill that I'm paying attention to is Florida Senate Bill 62. And this is for returning citizens that once they are released from incarceration, they will not lose in-state tuition rates due to being incarcerated. So their time in being incarcerated in a Florida state prison, they would be able to sit there and get credit for in-state residency. So in going to school, it's a much cheaper dynamic and much cheaper way in order to complete their education, which is just absolutely huge. Absolutely huge. So I'll keep you updated on those bills as well. As always, I want to thank you for always sharing your time with me. Thank you for continuing to spread Second Chance Coaching to your friends, family, loved ones. Keep telling them how we're doing. Give us feedback about how we're doing. If you want to be on the show, if you have a story to share with us, please come on the show. I'd love to have you. And once again, thank you for joining us. It's so much, very much appreciated. And I look forward to spending more time with you again next week. Thank you again for joining us here at Second Chance Coaching. In addition to coaching services for individuals and businesses, I'm also available for speaking engagements and workshops on criminal justice reentry, human resources, as well as organizational culture and leadership. Feel free to email me at richard@secondchancecoaching.com, as well as connect with me on Instagram at @TheDrRichardLewis. Remember, every day you are given this opportunity for your second chance, and I know you'll make the best of it. I love you all, and I look forward to connecting with you next time here at Second Chance Coaching.